Hello and welcome to See Nobody Cares, the podcast where we talk about whatever we want because there's nobody listening anyway. I am your host, Ollie Schaus. With me, as always, my co-host, Ballgame. Tonight is episode 24. Ballgame, how you doing tonight?
Bien. Buenas noches, mi amigo Ollie.
Great. That we have a nice guest on and you can't even act, you know, sensible.
I'm doing my Duolingo right now. I gotta get my Spanish in every day. It's all about Rex, Ollie. It's all about Rex.
Got it. So what are you learning Spanish for?
Why not? You know, I got some time on my hands. My son is learning Spanish. I want to be able to learn with him, so gonna have some fun with it.
Well,
I used to speak Spanish. I went through 2 years of Spanish in high school. Then I took a college level Spanish class my senior year in high school, and I was pretty close to fluent. But if you don't use it, you lose it.
That is true. Yeah, I've lost all the Klingon that I knew. I mean, not all of it. There's some poco. Anyway, we have a very special guest with us tonight. We have the Disney Cicerone herself, Kate Grasso. Hi, Kate.
Hi, hello. I'm so happy to be here.
We're glad that you came on. Those of you who have not come across Kate on TikTok, you must. She is would you describe yourself as a amateur Disney historian?
I guess so. I guess that's a good way to put it. I always say obscure Disney history with a dash of encouragement.
That's a perfect description of it. I would agree with that as well. So how did you land on the name Disney Cicerone?
Oh, that's a good question. So back when I was kind of deciding what to do, back when, you know, the whole world changed a couple of years ago.
And, oh, yeah.
You know, trying to figure out where my life should go from there. I decided I was going to pursue some Disney content because a few years previous, somebody had told me like never to go after it because, well, this is actually a little sad because they said I was a woman and all of the best ones were men and they were the only successful ones, so I shouldn't try.
Boo. Which is,
yeah. So I decided, I was like, well, you know what? The whole world's kind of gone up in smoke, so I might as well just do whatever I want anyway. So I was at the beach and I was kind of like thinking like, okay, what do I want to do? If I'm going to do this, what am I going to call it? And a Cicerone is someone who's kind of an expert in their field, somebody who can show you, like a museum docent who can like show you more about the artifacts you're seeing than just what you kind of see on the surface. So I was like, that would be perfect for this because I've been researching random Disney history facts for, you know, eons. I think it would have been like 16 years at that point. And I was like, I think I'll just, you know, give it a try, maybe put this name here with Disney and see what happens and hope they don't sue me and go from there.
I'm assuming that you're still here. It still says Disney Cicerone, that has not happened.
It has not happened. And I think they are aware of me at this point. So I think I'm okay because I am a guide for Disney. I'm not saying I am Disney. So we're good.
I mean, you are shepherding people in the masses to Disney. They should be thanking you.
I don't know about that, but I'm happy to share these random facts and history and the stories of all these amazing Disney artists and Imagineers that made the Disney parks what they are and the Disney movies what they are. I love sharing all those rich details because they're all made by human beings who have stories. And so I want people to be able to hear the humanity behind what created all these things we love and then also connect it back to our own stories as we're processing through whatever we're going through.
Damn, the way you said that, it was so great. Like, you have to have a course at a college. You need to become a college professor. I'm already locked in. I'm already, like, I have my pen ready. I'm taking notes. Let's go. I'm fired off, Teddy.
No, my husband's actually a college professor, so he's got that role in our house. So I can't have that one.
He can teach you how to make a syllabus and, you know, we could talk about some formative assessments together. Like, we can do this.
I would take that class. Absolutely. I thought I was, an amateur Disney historian. I thought I knew a lot of things that others didn't know until I found your channel. Mm. And I was like, I know nothing. Absolutely nothing.
I'm sure you know lots of things.
I do now, actually, because I've learned so much more from you. And I get to point out other things to my kids. And So when did you start your TikTok account?
Right about that time in 2020 when everything changed.
All
right. I did it early 2020. And then I just like didn't do much with it for a while. I was just kind of playing around and seeing what I wanted to do. I actually had Instagram before that. And before that, I started a blog first because I'm a writer by trade. That's really what I love to do. And nobody read my blog and nobody visited my Instagram. And I was like, you know what? Nobody's listening anyway. I'm like, nobody cares what I'm doing. I'm just going to start posting stuff, whatever I feel like.
And that's how it's done.
So I did do that. I started posting on TikTok and then I had a couple of videos just kind of got a little bit of traction. And I was just like, I got one that hit like 10,000 and I was like, oh my gosh, you know, that's crazy. And of course, then I had a post that blew up that was on the Snow White fountain that blew up to, I think it's now 21 million views, which was crazy. Like, I can't even comprehend that. And I was like, this is my chance. If I'm ever going to do this and do this for real, this is the one opportunity I got and I have to go after it. So then I decided I was just going to start posting every single day for a year. And I'm like, whatever I feel like posting, whatever brings me joy, whatever I want to share, that's what I'm going to post. And that's what I did.
Wow. And that's commitment every day, every day. James, you want to record every day?
Nope.
Podcast recording is demanding. So it's, I know podcast recording takes a lot of energy and effort. So kudos to you guys.
It does. Thank you. Yeah. I want to say, so I also downloaded TikTok in 2020 because, you know, what else are we going
to
do?
So hold on. Can I ask a question, guys? You keep alluding to the world changing in 2020, and I'm racking my brain what it must be. And I'm only thinking, like, are we talking about the release of the Popeye's chicken sandwich? Is that what changed the world in 2020?
You know, that's a far better memory to have. So
yes,
Popeye's chicken sandwich that changed the world in 2020. That's it.
Sorry for taking us off the rails.
Somehow that closed Disneyland forever with the Popeye's chicken sandwich. So
it was that good.
Everybody was stuck in the drive-thru. They couldn't get out. James.
So where was I? Oh, yeah. So I got TikTok and I was mainly there for the laughs, right? I was always scrolling for something that was going to make me laugh. I didn't care about the silly dances. I didn't care about, you know, all the filters and all the weird stuff on there. I just wanted to laugh. And, you know, that leads you to some Disney people. And I saw some funny Disney stuff. And then I came across this one and this lady blew my mind about a fountain that I didn't know anything about. And it was an instant follow. And and I've enjoyed the journey since. So thank you for what you do. And it does bring joy. And I'm proud of you.
Thank you. It means so much. Honestly, it's so sweet to hear how people do find what I do because, you know, you just kind of put something out there and sometimes you hear something, sometimes you don't. You're like, I don't know who's out there watching this. Does it matter? I don't know. So that's wonderful. And, you know, ironically, that post that I made, the facts in that, I'm usually so diligent about my facts and like making sure that I've doubled, triple checked all my boxes. But that story that I told wasn't 100% correct. Because they had discovered something at Imagineering in John Hench's desk that was not public knowledge that actually changed the story a little bit. And so Kevin Lively, who's now former Imagineer, but he was Imagineer, worked at Disney, and he stitched mine. And he said, well, here's like the full story. But he was like, but that was the common story that everybody knows. But here's like what we just found out, which was really cool that like that post actually helped us discover more Disney history. That was really neat.
And now you're part of Disney history. That's awesome.
I know. I'm tickled. It's great.
So I did just finish reading your first book, A Glimpse of the Magic. And let me back up. So on TikTok and on other platforms, you know, you have lots of Disney influencers. There's so many that you could throw a rock at Disneyland or Disney World and you're going to hit five of them.
Sure.
And so it is a very difficult niche to stand out in.
Very. Yes.
Because and here's what I think makes you different and your content different is all of them are telling you, you know, what's so great at Disneyland or Disney World, or what should you do, or what's the best thing to do, or where you should eat and all that. And your focus is on not just the history, but why Disney matters and why it matters, not just, you know, to the world at large, but to the individual. And that, I think, is where you strike a chord with people that others fail to do.
Yeah, I think, you know, when my husband and I were chatting about starting this whole thing, before I even like committed to the name Cicerone or anything like that, I was like, I told him, I said, if I'm just going to do what everybody else is already doing, I don't want to do it. I said, I have to do something different, and I have to do something that reflects who I am as well and helps people. Like, I really do want to help people with what I'm doing. And so he's like, well, what is it that you see here? And I was like, you know, well, nobody, it feels like we can't get a pulse on exactly why we're so obsessed about this thing. You know, it seems like a weird thing from the outside, and a lot of people make fun of Disney adults and things for that, and I get it. But like, you know, why are we so obsessed with this? Why does this resonate with us? Why is it important in our lives? And why is it okay that it's important in our lives? And he's like, well, that's it. That's what you need to make content about. That's what you need to write about, is, you know, how this connects back to us. And I'm like, okay, so that's what I'm going to do. And that's how, that's kind of what I've done ever since, is both with my work, and not all of my posts kind of hit a super deep chord, just because I need levity in my own life as well, you know, but I do with some of the books I write and the, you know, things that I, the content that I make, I really try to bring it back to a perspective of how, what does this mean to us personally? Cause I think that that is what, that's why we love Disney in the first place.
I couldn't agree more. For myself, you know, I didn't have a great childhood, but the great moments I remember were Disney, whether it was at a park, at the movies, whatever it might be. And those are what stand out to me more than any of the not so great stuff.
Sure.
So when I'm there, it's like I'm connected to, you know, that little boy that was there that loved it. And I just think, the way you portray things, I think that really does pull that out of people. And I think Disney does that by and large across the board.
Sure. Well, and that reminds me of Walt, right? That was what Walt was trying to do building Main Street USA, was reclaiming parts of his childhood that he really kind of just lost, and reclaiming the happy parts of his childhood, because not all of them were happy. So, you know, it's very much why he built Disney. As you think of, the world went through all of these changes with great depressions and wars and whatnot. And, you know, by the 1950s, people needed to have a place where they could go to kind of have the childhood they never got to have, and also recapture the pieces of their childhood that they did, recapture the pieces of their childhood that they did love, you know. And so I think that the fact that that's how it was made, and then that's also what it means to us, I think, is such a special connection.
Yeah. James, we should just let her talk.
Oh, I'm captivated over here. I'm never this quiet.
He is never quiet. You've tamed the beast today.
I'm also okay talking about chicken sandwiches, because I do love those too. So
We're not allowed to do that anymore. We actually did a whole episode where we were taste testing four different chicken sandwiches.
Oh, my goodness.
And yeah, the backlash from the chewing sounds was swift.
Gross.
So we don't eat on the show anymore, unfortunately.
Smart. Yeah. Well, live and learn, you know.
So back to your first book, A Glimpse of the Magic. Having read this, you're obviously a writer at heart. Was this just a, hey, I've been doing this content, I really want to write something down? Is that where this came from? Or did you, it's almost like a blog.
Yeah, well, some of it was. Funny that you would say that. That first book, because I had been writing in a blog for over a year with I just shouldn't say nobody read it, because my husband and my mom and my dad were very diligent readers of my blog, my number one supporters, which I love. But virtually nobody saw most of it. And so I was like, well, why don't I take some of these? And I did alter them. I did edit them, and I did kind of add different things and whatnot. But I was like, why don't I turn these into a book? Because I have almost enough content for it. I probably added another 5 or 6 chapters to it. that wasn't on my blog, and they're not exactly the same as what they are online. But and I also added some of the poetry. I've been writing poetry since I was like small. I just love playing with words and getting them to communicate what you want to say exactly with the correct words. It just fascinates me. So having just a few of anchoring poems in there, as well as these like writings that are just kind of thoughts about different things in the parks and different moments in history, Disney history, that resonate with us. And I'm actually writing a sequel to it right now that is not on a blog, but it's 100% original, new. But yeah, that's where it kind of came about. Was like, I've always wanted to write a book. I've already got like so much of it written. I might as well just like go for it and see if anybody wants to actually read it. So
that's what it's about. What was your process? Yeah. What was your writing process in going for it? So you had your blog pieces, you had ideas. Like most people, a lot of people I know want to write a book. They just don't know how to start.
Yeah.
What was your process?
Everybody's writing process is different. I will say that I have some really great best-selling author friends of mine that I've talked about this a lot. My creative process really for me is just like sit down and just start writing. Just get something on the paper, and it doesn't have to be good, or the screen as it is these days. But you know, get something out of you that you just start with. Usually, for me, my process has to do with what I do now. Not necessarily that first book, but what I'm doing now is, I go to the parks a lot, which helps. And I'll see something that just sparks something for me. And I'm like, that's a moment. And then my brain somehow just connects it to all the Disney history I know, which is like, 18 years of studying Disney history. And I'm like, oh, but this connects to that, or this connects to that. Or I'll see a Disney history story that then connects something to me personally. And then I'm like, I'm just going to write about that. So usually it's something that just like is like a little spark of inspiration that not to call in Figment here, but that really just kind of drives the whole thing, and then suddenly I'm just kind of writing, and then I'll go back and edit and whatnot. But again, that's my process, and everybody else's is different. So it really has to depend on you personally, how you write, what you think. Some people write like jot down notes in their phone and then turn it into something later, so it really depends on the individual, but that's kind of what I do.
Okay. Very cool.
Do we have a title for the sequel book yet?
I haven't released the title, so not yet, but it's coming. It's coming. And I'm also writing the third book in my other fiction series at the same time, because I'm an overachiever. So,
which are both in my Amazon shopping cart. So I just have to, pull the trigger.
I totally get it.
I was going to ask, so that everything's available through Amazon for our listeners if they want to buy.
Yes, all the books, if you search for Disney Cicerone or Kate Grasso, they're all on Amazon, also Kindle Unlimited. So if people don't already are a subscriber and they don't want to buy a physical copy, that's an easy way for them to read. And also on Audible, the first two are on Audible. I'm still working on the third one,
because I was just going there. You have a very like easy listening voice. Did you do the recordings yourself for Audible?
I did, yes. And I'm working on the third book, but it just takes so long to do audio editing. So, but it'll get there pretty soon. We've just had a really busy beginning of our year. So,
well, the third one's coming. I've got Audible credits. I'll do that.
And there you go.
I can get the stories on my way to work in the morning. I like that.
There you go.
Touching back on the poetry aspect.
Yeah.
So my favorite poem in the book was right after my actual favorite chapter of the book. And it was the last one, before and after. The
like
poem about Walt and Roy. It's, I'm not going to give it away because you got to buy the book and you got to read it. But it was very touching. And the Find Your Roy chapter was, Roy Disney, his Walt's brother, was his greatest supporter, his biggest cheerleader, but also his foil at times, right? It was hey, Walt, we can do this, but this, we need this to make it happen. Or, hey, we don't have the money for this. Or, Walt, I'll go find the money for this. And everybody needs a Roy in their life. My wife is my Roy. She's my biggest fan, my biggest cheerleader, although she's never listened to an episode of this podcast. So but she's like, I don't care.
Oh, Molly, you shouldn't have said that. Now I'm never going to call her by her first name ever again. I'm just going to call her Roy.
That's fine. She won't be offended by that at all. But she is my biggest defender, my biggest cheerleader. And she's also the one that reins me in at times saying, hey, that's not going to happen, but we could do this. So, James, do you have your Roy?
I think my Roy has always been my mom, to be honest with you.
Yeah. I think
moms are kind of like built-in Roys, right? Like they're kind of just there. Like they support you. They hold you down when you need to get held down. They correct you. Like they kind of always, at least my mom always gives me that feedback, just what I need, how I need it. Even at the young age of
43.
I still get that.
Hey, that is young.
Yeah, 43 years young.
That's right.
Kate, who's your Roy?
Complicated question, because I know when I wrote that, who I was thinking of when I wrote that. But I will say, of course, the people who read my blog before anybody else would be, you know, my husband and my parents definitely are my Roy, my husband of now 18 years, which is crazy. But
awesome.
Yeah. But I also say that my Disney community that I'm in, we call the Pocket Fam, after this is my friend Kirk from Walrus Carp. I do a podcast with him as well, but we do, he has like a whole following for his live streams. And when sometimes he has to put us in his pocket when he's live streaming. And so we became the Pocket Fam. And it's just like a really wonderful community of Disney people that are really sincere and kind and not catty and weird. Like some Disney communities are like just really out there. People that are just very argumentative and like it's not like a pleasant place to be. I don't know why. But this one is in particular has been so supportive of me from pretty much the very beginning. And so I call them they are my Roy because they are the ones that have cheered me on beyond my you know, inner circle every step of the way.
Wow. Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. And remind me, what is the name of the series of the fiction books?
Pixie Dust in the Park is the name of the series, but there are two books in it currently. There's Where the Fireflies Dance and What the Mansion Eyes See. And Where the Fireflies Dance is set in Disneyland. It's a romantic suspense that stars Disney history live streamers, which might sound a little familiar. But not me. It's not based on anybody in particular in real life, I promise. It's just all fictional characters based on my own kind of experiences in the parks. And then the one that is in Disney World, which is What the Mansion I See, is kind of a haunted mansion themed book that's in Walt Disney World. And that is also Disney History live streamers. But it's a continuation of the first book. They're standalone novels, but they have the same kind of characters in them. So they all relate to each other. And then there'll be a third one that I'm working on right now that I don't have a name for yet, but is the last couple and they're former cast members. So I'm getting to interview a lot of cast members for this one, which is really fun.
That's super cool.
Yeah. And it's based in Walt Disney World, but then ends up in Disneyland Paris. So we have three theme parks by the end of it, hopefully.
Fantastic.
That's the plan. Yeah.
All right. Okay. So here's where the podcast takes a hard left. And okay. This is usually the most fun part of the podcast.
Ready.
We love our guests. We like to keep them, you know, a little off balance. James has got five random, well, one mainstay question and four random questions for you. James, take it away.
Well, thank you. So we've kind of gone into this loop on this first question. It shouldn't be as divisive as it is, but it just always, you know, it seems to be separating people, breaking up families, and it eats at me a lot. So
now I'm scared.
I need to know, where, Kate, do you stand on pineapple on pizza?
Oh, I am a very pro pineapple on pizza because Hawaiian is my favorite.
And I'm just going to go back. I'm going to reference our kind of pre-chat before we started recording. Kate said she's Italian, friend. So we have an Italian on here saying pineapple on pizza. Okay, there we go.
I am part Italian. I am part Lithuanian. So the part of me that's Italian likes pineapple on pizza. Right.
So although this seems to be a very, very divisive topic. Majority of our guests have been pro pineapple.
Excellent.
So,
yes.
Yeah. I think the divisive people are the anti-pineapple people. I think they're the ones that that create the friction, because the pineapple people don't care if you don't like pineapple on your pizza.
True.
But the no pineapple people are very anti-pineapple. Like, you offend them by eating pineapple.
Right. Like, yeah. They're not eating. It's fine. They're not even going to eat it, but they're just upset. You cannot put pineapple on a pizza, and they start to lose their shit.
It's like you've committed a crime.
Yeah. Right. And pizza as a whole is divisive. We've gone down the rabbit hole talking about Detroit pizza, Chicago-style pizza. Is it a pizza? Is it a casserole? You know, sauce on top, cheese on the bottom. What the hell is that? Like, we've had all these conversations. And like, there can be different pizza, and you're allowed to like different pizza.
Yes. We just went to New York this past weekend, too, for a family wedding. And so my kids had New York-style pizza for the very first time. They're like, Mom, these things are gigantic. Like, these slices are huge. Like, how do we eat this? I was like, okay, well, you have to fold it, honey. This is how you fold your pizza.
Oh, that's fantastic. So what, if you had to pick a type of pizza, what's your favorite type?
It really is Hawaiian. That is my favorite. I think my husband's sick of me ordering it. So I try every once in a while to order like a Me Lovers or Supreme or something for him, just to, you know, balance it out and love him a little bit. But we usually get Hawaiian because he loves me.
Have you ever thrown jalapeno on your Hawaiian?
No, I'm not a huge spicy person, but my husband probably would. He loves spicy stuff. Interesting twist.
Little bacon, little jalapeno. Or sometimes if you want to experiment with your basic Hawaiian, switch the red sauce for a barbecue sauce.
Ooh, and I haven't tried that yet.
It takes it to a whole different place.
Okay, noted.
And I just
try.
I will share. I'm a big fan of new experiences, and so I live in California, but right down the coast from us, about 15 minutes, is a little place called East Coast Pizza, and they serve kind of a New York style pizza. It's not authentic, but it's a good attempt, and I'm going to give them credit. And they had a Hawaiian pizza, but they had it drizzled with barbecue sauce and ranch, of all things.
Wow.
Weird.
And I was like, I'm going to try it. You know, I've dipped my pizza in ranch. I don't usually do that, but I have. I'm going to try it. And it worked, because the ranch and the barbecue actually played really well together.
Interesting.
You know, which was a surprise. I don't think it's something that I'm going to, you know, go after every time. Maybe I'll never have it again, but I tried it, you know, give it one thumb up, not two, but one.
I was in France as an exchange student when I was 16, and they got a pizza for dinner. And I was so excited because I was just kind of like worn out eating all the like French food. I love French food, don't get me wrong, but I was just, you know, homesick at that point. So I was like, yes, pizza for dinner. I'm all about it. And so they got this pizza. I don't even remember what else the other toppings were on it. And I was like, this looks amazing. And they're like, hold on, we have to like finish it. And so they took the like raw egg that was in the middle and spread it around the pizza. Oh, yeah. And I like almost cried. I was like, I don't know, what? Why would
I don't want this.
So I knew you were going to say that. I had a very similar experience in France. It was like my first night there, and we had dinner like at midnight, which is normal, I guess, there.
Yeah.
And it was the same thing, a beautiful looking pizza with the raw egg on top. Oh, wow.
Yeah. And it's a thing there. It's what you do. And I'm like, who taught you to do this? Like, who hurt you? Like, you do this to pizza.
Who hurt you? So, you know, that's kind of like, although I said I respect everybody's choices, that's when I just, you know, it made my soul sad. I didn't yell at anybody, but it just made me really sad.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too.
All right. We're going to move on from pizza. We just never know where we're going to go with this question. We've had so many awesome experiences. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
So in the untimely event of your death, which I'm really going to be heartbroken about, if you came back as a ghost and got your choice to haunt somebody, who would you haunt?
Oh my gosh, question.
That's a morbid question. I apologize. I'm being helpful.
If you'd heard any of the previous episode, it's actually not as morbid as other topics our guests have taken us down. So
can
ghost
I just
is,
like,
is tame.
Can I just like haunt Imagineering on Flower Street. Can I just hang out there and like watch them build stuff and like also like poke them when they do something that Walt wouldn't do?
Yeah.
Like, that's probably what I would do.
Kind of like a moaning Myrtle, just kind of hanging out there.
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
but, why not? Less like less bathrooms and crying involved, just more like straight up. Like making sure that they're staying on task, maybe slipping some Mark Davis concept art like on through their desks every once in a while just to see if they could bring some stuff back. That's probably what I would do.
Wow. Even in death and haunting, you're going to be super productive. I love
it. Oh, of course. 100%. I'm an Enneagram one. That's what we do.
The kindest ghost ever.
Keep going. Light. You know, I could push their chairs in for them and stuff. I'm happy to help.
Kate, way to think outside the box, but right up against it.
I do what I can.
Productivity has gone up 12% this last year. What's going on?
Well, if they're not going to hire me in life, you know, maybe they can have me around in the afterlife. That's what I think.
Oh, man. James, who are you going to haunt?
That's a good question. You know, if I were to pass away and come back and haunt somebody, I don't think I'd want to be a scary ghost or anything like that. I'd want to be like a helpful spirit. I'd want to be kind. And so I think, you know, I really like the Egon ghost in Ghostbusters Afterlife, how he plays chess with his granddaughter. So maybe I would do that. Maybe I'd come back and like play board games with my son.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Maybe something like that.
Wow. You guys are so nice.
How about you, Ollie?
I'm gonna haunt the Dodger locker room.
Why do you want to be in a locker room for eternity?
Oh, yeah. Because
questions.
I hate the Dodgers. But now that I think about it, I would have to see a lot of nude men. And maybe I just haunt the pitcher's mound at Dodger Stadium.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. There we go. But yeah, home plate. I'm going to haunt home plate. Balls will be strikes. Strikes will be balls. No swings will be swings.
It's going to be like the opposite of angels in the outfield. Can we get Joseph Gordon-Levitt back? Is he going to make a movie?
Nope. We're going to have a specter behind the plate. That'll be me.
The Haunting of Chavez Ravine, starring Ollie Schaus, Danny Glover, and Joseph Gordon-Levitt. That's a blockbuster.
You become a legend in the stadium. You know, they would just know you. They would.
This is true.
No,
this is true.
Smart. You
know, when we're done with the show, I'm gonna look it up, see if there's any like stadium hauntings of like lore around there. And there has to be.
Yeah,
there's a whole bunch at Disney.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there was the Curse of the Bambino. That's not really a haunting, but it was a curse.
It was a curse.
And maybe it was a haunting.
And there's
we
the
just
curse
didn't
of,
know.
The goat. The curse of the goat in Chicago.
Oh, yeah. The goat. Yeah.
So, I mean, there's lots of different like curses. And baseball is very, I mean, they're not a little stitches. They're super stitches.
A little stitches.
Oh, there's my dad joke of the day.
Wow.
Awesome.
All right. Question number
three.
So, hooray, you're alive again.
Yay.
Now you're president of the United States. Congratulations.
Sweet.
The first 100 days for a president is super important. So what would be your biggest goal or initiative in your first 100 days to solidify your presidency?
Oh, goodness. I don't want to get political.
Doesn't have to be.
Besides the fact that we're going to abolish teasing people about pineapple on pizza. I think
not my vote.
That's day one. That's a day one executive action. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think there would be a lot more do a lot more things about anti-bullying stuff, both online and in schools and things like that, because I think that there's so much trauma that happens to children and adults as well from bullies in all places. So I don't know how I would go about that, but it would be an initiative for me to decrease the amount of like just awful, mean, cruel things that people say to people that destroy them. I just think we need less of that. We need more kindness and compassion. And so I don't know if it's even possible, but that's what I would try to do. It would be something for bullying.
Amen.
Okay. Now, one of our previous guests had an alternative way of saying bullying that I thought was hilarious. It is, what was it? Aggressive peer pressure. Is that what Lauren called it? Yeah.
Interesting.
Add the aggressive peer pressure clause into that law.
There you go. Okay.
Sorry. Fair. Yeah. That is great. That's a good answer, I think. All right, Ollie, you're president. I don't know
that
how
was
the
my,
hell
like,
that
was my Miss America answer. Did I do okay?
It's great.
You too.
Ollie, you're president. Well, what's going to be your biggest initiative in the first 100 days?
I'm also not going to go political here. I am going to push for the day after Halloween is a national holiday.
Oh, yes.
Oh, that's a good one.
Vote.
Can we add in Super Bowl, the Monday after the Super Bowl too?
Sure. Why not? If we're just giving away free extra days off and Black Friday, why not? Let's throw that one in there too. You know,
Boxing Day should actually be a holiday in the U.S. too. Boxing Day.
Oh, absolutely.
Day
yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah. Which yes. is actually a real interesting holiday. Next time we have our Canadian sensation Rohit on, we should talk to him about Boxing Day. We have a really good friend who's been a guest on here. He's our token Canadian, and he is just a pleasure every time we talk to him. So we're going to have Boxing Day added to that. So thank you for that.
I love that.
There are certain days that just make sense. Like the 5th of July is another one. Right?
Yeah.
You're up late. You're out in the sun all day on the 4th. A lot of people chill on the 4th, but they're up late watching fireworks. So then now we've moved. I don't know about where you guys are. There's a lot of fireworks shows on the 3rd of July.
Yep.
Now. And so it's like we're moving the holiday up a night so we can recover on the 4th or just relax on the 4th. So, or for the Super Bowl, maybe it doesn't have to start at 6 p.m. at night or 9 p.m. at night. Maybe it could go back to a 1 o'clock start. Then you don't have to stay off. Like, I don't know.
What can I tell you? We don't actually celebrate the Super Bowl in our house, but we do celebrate an alternative to the Super Bowl, which is called Pirate Bowl. And we watch Pirates of the Caribbean movies, basically a huge marathon. And we eat all the same food as the Super Bowl. But like nobody in our house really watches football in particular. I do love baseball, but like we just don't watch we don't watch sports like that often. So we're like, well, let's just do something we do, and that is Disney. And so my kids get very excited for Pirate Bowl every year when they see the gosh. Super Bowl stuff come out.
I absolutely love that.
Yeah.
I love it. You like you celebrate with the food. And so I love watching the Super Bowl. I love football. But what I do, I agree, kind of to your point, there's a lot of people that feel obligated or feel forced into going to a Super Bowl party or watching it. And I always feel bad for those people because that's how I feel on New Year's Eve. Like, I feel like I'm always being forced to do something big on New Year's Eve, wear a top hat and like dress up like Mr. Peanut and like give a damn that we actually stayed up till midnight. I don't care.
Why do I have to stay up so late? I'm so tired.
Why am I here? And like, so I love that you have found something that, you know, you can do that you like to do. That's awesome.
Yeah, we don't want to miss out on all the fun, but we also don't really want to watch the game. So now it's just something we do. We actually did start off as Office Bowl with my husband and I, but we had to change it when we had children.
For the little ones, yeah.
For the little ones, yes.
My wife and I, we invented a holiday. And the first one was last year, so I think we're going to repeat it this year. So I live in Phoenix, and we had a record hot summer last year. And like we had like 52 days consecutive over 110 degrees. So we got to August, and August is just the worst month. There's no holidays, you know, it's just hot. You're stuck inside. So we came up with Saint Screw August Day. And it is we do a like a Hawaiian luau. We have you know, fun tiki drinks, we have friends over, you know, Hawaiian music, and I don't know why we call it Saint Screw August Day, but it works.
I love it.
Do you guys celebrate with air conditioning?
Oh yes, that is the only way to celebrate.
lots of ice and air conditioning.
Yeah, I love it. Very good.
That's so fun. I love that. I don't want to invent more holidays now.
Yeah, do it. We can put together a committee, I think. I think it's a great idea.
In our first 100 days as president. That's what we'll do. We'll just...
Just holidays. No bullying in holidays.
No bullying in holidays. And my thing in my first 100 days is I'm just going to steal it straight from the movie or the book and the movie, Ready Player One. I just want to shut down social media on the weekend. I don't want, especially for kids. I want to put an age limit on social media, like 18 years old. Like, can't buy cigarettes, can't be on social media. And I just want it shut down on the weekend. I want kids engaging with each other in person, outside, playing sports, building a fort, you know, throwing rocks down at the creek. I don't know, like doing things that kids should be doing.
Can we add video games to that?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Oh, man, that would make my life so much easier.
Absolutely.
Then I won't have to fight with them.
Yeah.
You can't play because you can't play.
You can't play. Blame President ball game. It's ball game. I'd let you, but he said no. It's a boss, Ollie. I see.
No, I love that. It would also be less pressure for those of us who do work in social media to, like, I purposefully tried to take the weekends off as much as possible. I'll usually do some story posts or something, but weekends I try to take off because that's my time with my kids. So it'd be really nice to not have to actually be engaged on social media on those days. I'm all
about maybe that's too drastic for the world. Maybe we've come too far, but maybe there's like screen time limits that, you use your 30 minutes today. It's done.
Well, yeah.
Hard stop.
Get outside and go garden for a while.
Right.
Get out there.
More points. Like you get more screen time for like gardening. Like you log your gardening hours. And I don't know how to track that, but. You know,
that sounds complicated, but awesome.
It sounds well. I'm going to have a craft team on this. They're going to be on it.
Excellent.
And then my second thing is, you know, I'm going to clean up the post office. Like, enough of this Tom McEllislick bullshit. We got to get the post office fixed. Okay, it has to happen. I don't need my packages going from shipped out of San Diego. I live in Carlsbad, which is 25 minutes away. They don't need to go to Charlotte, North Carolina, back to Dallas, Texas, up to Vancouver, British Columbia, over to Omaha, Nebraska, back to San Diego, to the place where it started, then to Carlsbad. That doesn't need to happen.
That's crazy.
We can do better.
That was the tamest ball game rant we've had on it. He usually has a rant.
I was trying not to cross the line. I pulled it back. I was like, I'm right there. I realized I got myself. So,
Kate, I'm not kidding. He is on his best behavior tonight.
Oh, appreciate that. But so, I like a good rant. I'm all for it.
Yeah.
So actually, I had a rant. We had recorded an episode that was supposed to release this week, and due to technical difficulties, it was lost.
And it's the worst.
And I had my first rant ever, but I'm not in that place anymore. So there's no rant this week.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Technically, it never happened.
I learned a lot. I learned that Ollie hates old people.
That is not what I said.
Broke my heart. It really broke my heart. Like,
that can't be true.
No, that is not it. Because I'm an 85-year-old man on the inside, James. You know this.
So you're a self-hating 85-year-old man.
Oh my gosh.
It was confusing. I just didn't understand why you had to be so mean to the old people. They're just trying to get a snack at Costco, and he's like railing on us.
To our senior listeners, I don't hate you. I love you. Don't listen to James. He's crazy.
All right.
I need another question here, James. Save me.
Next question. Kate, what's your philosophy on participation trophies for children?
Ooh, that's a good one. I'm actually not for participation trophies.
Yeah.
Sounds bad, but it's like, I think that, you know, earning, just participating enough is just already you've learned so much from that. You've gotten a lot being part of the team. Now, everybody should be included in some way or another, you know, in whatever's going on, and nobody should feel discluded. But I also don't think we need to like reward just being there necessarily. I don't usually get a reward for that, for just showing up all the time. So I don't know if that's a good lesson to teach kids, but I do. I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of them. But I don't have like really strong feelings, I suppose. So
I'm not going to be the person that says, you know, the kids today are ruined because they got a participation trophy. No, I'm not going to go that far.
Yeah, no.
But yeah, to your point, yeah, you just showed up, that you did the bare minimum. That's not trophy worthy. Like,
right.
You know, if this were like a karate class and you took the whole class and, you know, you get like a patch for being in the class, that's one thing. But
right.
If it's like, you're not going to get Star Karate Kid, you know, the trophy at the end because you showed up every time. So I think awards, when they are earned and merited, absolutely makes sense. But mm-hmm. No participate. And this is coming from someone who has a participation trophy from T-ball when I was 6. Because I did not deserve any kind of trophy, believe me. On a team of 6-year-olds, I was the worst 6-year-old in T-ball. So, I didn't get a big head over my trophy. So,
I will say that my son, you know, he got trophies for scouts back in the day, you know, and you know, he looks at him now, and I was just like, look, you got the trophy for this. He's like, Mom, they just had to come up with something for everybody, and they randomly assigned me that one because my car kind of looked like that thing. And I was like, so that's what participation trophies are to me, is just like, it wasn't meaningful to him because he didn't win anything. He didn't like go above and beyond to get something. He didn't earn something. So it actually didn't mean much to him. And so that tells me that I'm like, it may not be worth the effort to do this, because the kids know. They're like not stupid.
No.
You know?
You get to an age where it's not appropriate, right? So like,
yeah.
I think it's great to encourage kids, and we can encourage kids in many ways. We can give mm-hmm. them positive feedback. We can tell them specifically the thing they did well and how they did it and how they overcame something and how they grew. There's many ways to celebrate kids, but I think just giving everybody uniformly, like, here's your trophy because you signed up, your parents signed you up for the rec league, or here's your trophy right. because you entered the science fair for whatever reason, right? And
yeah.
It's not authentic. And right. like kids aren't stupid. They're actually very smart and they're perceptive. And so
right.
they do begin to know. So like I once did it at a summer camp. They were like, every kid, we're going to give them an award. And people were struggling in these behind door meetings. Like, well, we've got kid X and kid Z, and they started making up these things. Like, can we just not?
Right.
We don't need to hear these awards. Like, if you want to give a camp, like a few awards, that's great. But not every kid needs to get one. Like, you know, best at showing up to classes on time goes to Ollie Chow's. Way to go, Ollie, Mr. Punctuality.
You know, I do pride myself on my punctuality. My rule of thumb is 8 minutes early. Wherever it is I'm going, I want to be there 8 minutes early. 10 is ridiculous. 5 is like, did you really get there early, or did you just accidentally show up early because, you know, you hit the right traffic lights? 8 minutes. That is, you know, good. Words of wisdom from Molly. It shows you care. It's important to you. No one wants anybody to be late, but you're there, you're ready, and you did, you know.
Just sound one out. This sounds like 7 minute abs. 7 minutes. No, you can't do that in 6 minutes.
You could break a sweat.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, I too like to be early, but I think going back to the trophies, like, there's a time and a place for every kid to get their love and their and I believe good coaches, good mentors, good teachers find that opportunity to celebrate each kid when it's their moment. And that
Absolutely.
Is authentic. And that is the authentic thing. And back to Kate's point, that's what kids remember.
Right. Those right. words that you say to encourage them to, you know, when, you know, somebody saying that they're proud of them, you know, like actually looking them in the eye and saying that, or like, you know, like, I love that you did this today or something, that goes so much farther than a trophy that like they just kind of were handed, you know?
Right. And a great example is I'm an assistant coach on a little league team, and I give out stickers that would go on the back of your helmet when you get a base hit.
Oh, cool.
And
that's fun.
It started actually with a company that I love, and they were just giving out free stickers to coaches to do this. And it started during that difficult time back in 2020 when, you know, no one could get a Popeye's chicken sandwich. and So it's a great little reward for kids. And I get kids that, like, you know, at the end, I don't make a big deal out of it. Like, hey, everybody, let's look at this. Because some kids get 3 hits every game and some get none. And one kid got, I want a sticker. Can I get a sticker, Coach James? Can I get a sticker? And I'm like, not today. You didn't swing the bat. I really want you to swing the bat. And I swear to God, that was so motivating for that kid. He was swinging the bat. I saw him at the batting cages. We had a great chat one afternoon at the batting cages. Next game, he goes up and he swings the bat for the first time and gets a big knock. And that was a great moment giving him that sticker because he knew, like, his eyes, he knew he was smiling ear to ear. He knew what he did. He knew he earned it, you know, and that's motivating. And then he knew he was successful and he's been swinging a hot bat ever since. So I love to reward kids. I love to acknowledge them. I love to celebrate everything, big and small, but I got to be a hard no on just patient trophy.
Yeah. But that sticker means so much more than any trophy, right? They have to work for it. Yeah.
And that one sticker for his hat carries more weight than another kid on our team that has 10.
Right.
Yep.
Right. And his parents were so proud of him too. Like, and you know, that's what it's about. Like, all right. Yeah, question number five. You know, Disney Cicerone, so I assume you love Disney movies, but I want to know, what's your favorite non-Disney movie?
There is quite a few. I have to say that one that I wore out growing up was the movie Ever After, which isn't technically a Disney movie, but it is a Cinderella story.
And it is Drew Barrymore at her best. Yes. And Angelica Houston is terrifyingly awful in that movie.
It's an amazing, amazing film. If you've not seen it, it's worth a watch, especially even if you're a Disney fan, even if you're not, it's a great movie. And I also really love the point in that movie. I don't want to spoil all of it, so in case you haven't seen it, but there is a point in that movie where they kind of change up the traditional story for a new storyline that's very much like a female empowering, which to me was very good for me as a young woman who's just kind of like, oh, I don't have to depend on men to do all these things. I can maybe do some things myself. And so for me, that was very formative in my years. I don't call myself like a huge, massive feminist or anything like that, but I am about empowering women for sure. And so that movie not only was beautifully made and written and funny as well, but and the costumes were wonderful, but the storyline behind it was really something that stuck with me for so long. And I think that also led into doing what I do now and choosing to step out and just breathe and take that step, even when it's scary, and just go and chase your dream, no matter what it is, even if you feel like you aren't worthy of it.
James, I think she just picked out our movie of the week.
I just actually wrote that down. I have not seen that movie.
Oh,
man.
It's
a great one.
It's
I want to say
really 90, good.
90s, maybe late 90s. I'm not really
I was
sure.
I was going to say 95 or 96. Yeah. So it's a 30-year-old movie. I don't know if you can really spoil it now. I mean,
well, you know.
A spoiler alert.
Well, and to your point of like a, you know, a feminist forward story. It is, but it doesn't feel like some of the modern stories. It doesn't feel forced, right?
No.
It's natural. It's well written. And you wouldn't sit there watching this going, ugh, why are they going this direction?
Right. Like, they're jamming something down my throat. Like, it's not like that at all. No.
Like the all female superhero scene in Endgame. It was like,
oh, yeah.
It was like, I like all of them, but it's like, why? Why would it just be them doing it? This doesn't even make sense. And it's like, oh, I get what they're doing, but it was super forced and it poorly written. Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys.
I'm with you on that. Honestly, I am. Yeah. Because they don't need to be by themselves to still be powerful, you know? Like they can be working with others.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was that was off putting, but no, James, add that. That is gonna be the See Nobody Cares movie of the week. Ever After, and we should have a female guest come on for that live with you.
Most likely, that's what will happen. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. And Ollie wants to talk to Kathleen Kennedy and get that all female scene scrubbed out of Endgame. I have that in my notes too.
She is also one of our top listeners. We've got her. We've got Ryan Reynolds, Guy Fieri. Fieri is a big listener. Who else we got?
Tom Cruise. Don't forget Tom Cruise. He's in there. Yeah, we got them all.
Yeah, we're real big in the Hollywood community.
Kathleen just listens to make sure we don't leak any information and that we don't shit all over her. So.
I think you'll enjoy, so we have our little Tiki mascot, right? He's our little Tiki logo. I don't know if you've seen that.
So we
had to name him.
Okay.
And we landed on, so we had an earlier episode where, gosh, James, what were we talking about where Thurl came up?
Oh, God. We were talking and I think you and I were just riffing on. It was either the Grinch or something at Disneyland, and I used the wrong name.
That's right. I think you said like Vincent Price or something. I said, no, that is Thurl Ravenscroft.
Like you just dropped Thurl Ravenscroft on me.
Okay. But Vincent Price is in the Disneyland Paris version of the Phantom Manor.
And I can guarantee you, I didn't know Vincent Price either. I can guarantee you, didn't know Vincent Price. I probably said Christopher, whatever his name, the guy that plays Count Dooku,
Christopher Lee?
Yeah, that's who I probably said, and you just dropped the name Thurl Ravenscroft on me like it was common knowledge and like every kid on the block knows Thurl Ravenscroft. And I was like, damn.
Ravenscroft.
Yeah.
Back to yes in there. Ravenscroft. Yeah. So our mascot is Lil Thurl.
Nice. Now he'll never forget.
Right.
So I just thought I'd throw that in there because I know you know who Thurl Ravenscroft is.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. And he's also on the organ and that's in the queue too for Walt Disney World. There's a Ravenscroft organ there. So if you're looking for a little nod to him, that's a good place to see it. It has a big old raven on it.
I have it on good authority that we just started this initiative, the Traveling Thurl, so people can take their pen on adventures and take pictures of it and post it to our thread. I have it on good authority that Lil Thurl is making his first appearance at the Magic Kingdom this week or this
weekend. I want a pin so I can take him places. That would be fun.
We can make that happen.
I would love
that.
We might know a guy or two.
Yeah.
You can hug me up. It'd be great. Yeah.
So I love that. We also have t-shirts available on Amazon with Lil Thurl on it. James and I don't know if I told you this. So James and I came to know each other through an online Facebook community basically a community around the shirt company called Roosevelt's. Have you heard of Roosevelt's?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we chatted through there. We wound up meeting in person a couple of times and, the rest is history, as they would say. and so we're extremely
active. You met a stranger on the internet is what you're saying.
Yes. 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 And now we travel across the country to hang out with other strangers that we meet off the internet.
It is excellent. It is everything our parents told us not to do. Do not talk to strangers on the internet. Do not give them your address. Do not give them your phone number and do not meet them at random coffee shops. And we do all of those things.
That's what I do too. That's how I met all of my Disney friends was online. So.
And then I tell my son the same thing, but I remember some what my mom would always say to me, do as I say, don't do as I do.
Yes. Yes. So, Kate, I don't know if you've had a chance to wear a Roosevelt, but they did just restock their Fantasia collection today and they are in men's and ladies cuts.
I'll have to check out the ladies cuts. I didn't even know they had women's. I've just seen the men's shirts around quite a bit.
Yeah, so not every shirt has a ladies cut, but they're bringing in more and more. And, if anything, it's another way to meet more incredible people and, quite frankly, a lot of Disney people.
Yeah, I know that my good friend, Lem, Magic Bands and Trash Cans, he works with them now as well. So he wears those shirts to the parks all the time. So I've been getting to see a lot of the designs that way, which is really cool because I love seeing them.
Well, you can also get one now. You can't pre-order anymore because the pre-order is done. But there is a an Ollie's wallpaper shirt that was available that actually matches my wallpaper that I've posted some TikToks in, but mainly a lot of selfies on our Facebook group. It's a geometric design. It looks a lot like Spaceship Earth. So I have a feeling you'll probably see some at Epcot.
Oh, I love that. How fun.
Yeah, it was, Roosevelt's did a shirt for charity. So it's pre-order. And then all the proceeds go to a child abuse prevention organization. So,
well, now I need to buy a shirt. So,
we'll see if we can find you one.
I definitely want to help out with that kind of thing. That would be great. I would love to participate. Yeah. Awesome.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we want to thank everybody for listening again. As always, you've been on with See Nobody Cares tonight. Our special guest was the Disney Cicerone herself, Kate Grasso. Please follow her on TikTok. Check out her books on Amazon, and you can get it on your Kindle, or you can also listen to it on audiobook. So as always, he's Ali. I'm Ballgame. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Bye.
Bye.